The Journey Into podcast is proud to present This Journey Into a Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away. A journey into Star Wars, featuring numerous delusions of grandeur.
Over the course of about 2 weeks, we have been, or will be, featuring episodes of Delusion of Grandeur that have been previously released on a separate feed. If you've already heard these episodes, then perhaps you'll enjoy hearing them again. If not, when we're finished up here, you can come back and join us for future delusions as well as future journeys into history or science fiction or horror or fantasy or the variety of other things that we like to feature here on the podcast.
This delusion was originally published on July 3rd, 2014.
It's a dark time for the Podosphere. Marshal Latham, striking from a hidden base, has won his first victory since forming the Journey Into podcast. During the battle, he managed to steal Rish Outfield away from the Doomsdief podcast, forming an alliance between them based on their love for Star Wars. Pursued by the Empire's sinister agents, Marshall and Rish believe they have something interesting to say about the decades-old franchise, its characters, the players behind the scenes, and the new adventures to come. Clearly, they must be suffering from delusions of grandeur.
I'm out of it for a little while. Everybody gets delusions of grandeur.
Well, here we are once again on the Star Wars Delusions of Grandeur podcast, and it's been about a month, a little over a month, so it's time for us to talk some more Star Wars. And we have our premier guest back with us, Dave Thompson.
Yay!
Hey, Dave.
I'm so happy to be back here.
Podcastle enforcer, Dave Thompson.
I've heard about that.
I have a picture.
My name is Marshall Latham.
My name's Rish Outfield.
And I'm your special guest, Dave Thompson.
There you go. And we have delusions of grandeur.
Yeah, see, I'm of two minds right now on this episode because, you know, I'm sure it's old news to everybody else, but Harrison Ford passed away today
on
Star Wars Episode 7. It was my understanding that he was crushed by a big door.
Oh, my gosh. I hadn't heard that. I mean, I knew he'd injured his foot, but I didn't realize it had taken the rest of him so quickly. Man.
No, Rish, no. Dave is right. Harrison Ford was just injured. He sprained his ankle somehow or did something, and no, he's just fine. He's going to continue on.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't know where I read that. It's the internet, I guess. Okay, let's move on. Forget that I said that.
Okay, all right.
I thought Chewie's Wookiee life debt would finally have expired at this point. He'd be a free Wookiee.
Yeah, true. Well, you know, I've been working under a delusion for the last few weeks, but I'm going to make this delusion a reality. I am going to be on the set of Star Wars 7 in London.
How? Why? When? Who? Wait, no, you said you.
No, I am going to be on the set of Star Wars 7 in London. Me and one guest. I'm going to be there. It's going to be me.
It's going to be me. I told my wife we're going to London this year.
You're taking your wife?
I'm going to take my wife.
I thought we made a pact. I thought if one of us won, we were going to take the other one.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to take your wife?
Wait, what are you guys talking about?
Jeez, man.
Well, J.J. Abrams came out with a video a few weeks ago and showed some things from the set of Episode 7 and told everybody about a promotion where he will, if you donate to UNICEF, $10 through Omaze.
The Force for Change.
The Force for Change. That's right. If you donate, you're entered for a chance to win for you and a guest to go to London and be on set and be a member of the crew of Star Wars Episode 7. So that first day that that came out, I put in my $10, put in my chance to win, so I'm going to do it.
Is there a deadline when you can't enter this anymore?
I believe it is ongoing.
I'm looking that up right now.
Looks like as of today, there are 36 days left.
36 days left. So, Rush, there's still a chance for you to go.
At the East Platform.
Docking Bay 94.
94.
Well, oh, wow, that's cool. Now, let's say that you did win that. Is that something that you would jump at the chance to do? Even if there was, you know, other things going on, or you had to get out of work or miss your kids' eighth grade graduation for that?
I don't know. It'd be hard to pass up that opportunity, that's for sure. I would do everything I could to make that happen. I would talk to people at work. I would work extra before and after, and I'd try to make it happen.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I'm trying to think of a circumstance. I mean, if it's an all expenses paid trip to England with a guest, going to Pinewood Studios, meeting J.J. Abrams, getting made up probably as some kind of alien to be in some kind of weird cantina-esque scene, I'm imagining. Man, I have a hard time imagining something that would make me be like, no, I'm not going to do it. It would have to be something earth-shattering.
Well, 1 second of screen time would be enough for me.
I would do it. I would do it even if there was no screen time involved. Like, just to be on the set and to meet everybody and be like, that would be awesome. That would be awesome.
Well, what do you win exactly? You get to be an extra, or they specifically say you get to be an alien? You don't have a line, right?
I do not believe you have a line.
Okay, here's airfare and accommodations to London for one winner and a guest. Behind-the-scenes access on the closed set of Star Wars Episode 7 as VIP guests of J.J. Abrams. And, Rish, dude, I mean, Star Wars and Lost. I would be all over that with Abrams. Winner will have the opportunity to meet the members of the cast. Winner and their guest will then be transformed by makeup and costume teams into a Star Wars character and filmed for a scene in Star Wars Episode 7. Maybe they'd even make a toy out of you. I don't know. But that would be awesome.
Wow, that's really neat. And all you have to do is donate $10 to...
Yep, it's I don't know if it's a foundation or just a nonprofit organization, but the Star Wars Force for Change. It's to benefit UNICEF. And it's all done through this website or web service called Omaze. And I guess they have several different celebrity type events or things that you can enter to win in donations to charity, to UNICEF. So basically, Star Wars is working with Omaze through Force of Change to benefit UNICEF and give you the opportunity to get on set.
Yeah, and if you go to omaze.com, there's a whole section on Force for Change about the stuff that they are using the donations for. They list stuff like this sounds like straight out of Star Wars. Portable solar-powered learning kits being built in China, Uganda, and Burundi to ensure underprivileged children in these countries have access to relevant, high-quality educational materials. Mobile phone application developed in South Sudan and Uganda and used in the Philippines that helps reunite children with their families after an emergency. All kinds of cool stuff. So, it's pretty sweet. It's pretty sweet.
You know, you might have the chance to meet other stars, too, like Mark Hamill or Carrie Fisher or Harrison Ford.
Oh, shoot. Did you guys hear about Harrison Ford? Holy cow. He was in an accident on the set. He caught fire and passed away I read it on the internet. There was a guy on MySpace. I don't know why I was on MySpace.
Rish. Don't believe everything you read on the internet.
Oh, okay.
He was only injured. He only sprained his ankle. He's good to go.
So they're shooting this thing right now, episode 7, and I noticed for months and months we had nothing, and then suddenly things started to leak immediately. Like, there would be pictures from the set. There was a picture of the Batmobile. There was a I'm sorry, I don't know.
Ben Affleck is in Star Wars.
He is, oh yes. God. And he's so ripped. It's frightening. But everything started to look like a very familiar planet. Did you think so, Marshall? From the very first picture you saw, you're just like, oh, I know where they are.
Yeah, they were back on Tatooine, it looks like.
And I was just amazed at how much stuff it seems they had built. Like, it was a purposeful... Like, they had made the decision, we're going to build all of this stuff and just let it sit there and weather it and all that, so that it feels like a real place, when the easy thing to do is to add it later.
Right, CGI.
Like they did in the prequels, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, especially episode 2 and 3, there were a lot of times when it's like, well, there were props, but there was no actual set in, you know, so-and-so place, or we had a chair and nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. It seems like they're going back old school practical effects. I mean, I'm sure there'll be CGI, but I think it'll be laced in there a lot more nuanced than just everything being CGI.
Is that good news to your ears, Dave?
Oh, yeah. I guess you haven't seen the video yet, Rish, for the Force for Change, but, you know, Abrams is talking about all the stuff that's happening, and as he's on set talking to the camera, and as he's talking, this weird creature just, like, walks up behind him, kind of, you know, this bizarre puppet-like creature with, I'm looking at it now, he's got, like, all these suitcases and things on his back that are taller than he is. And he looks into the camera, and then Abrams kind of looks at him, and he looks at Abrams, and he just walks off the screen. And I'm so excited about that kind of thing. I mean, the stuff in the prequels was interesting, but it felt, you know, and CGI was really just becoming its own thing at that point in time. But seeing something like that was just really, really cool for me, and I'm pretty excited about the practical effects, the way that the actors are going to be able to interact with them maybe a bit more, and you know, I think it'd feel more like a world lived in than something that's, you know, just on a green screen behind you.
Yeah, and there is a difference in feel. There are moments in episode 3. Where, like, Obi-Wan is talking to Yoda and Mace Windu, and not only does Yoda feel like a CG character, but Obi-Wan and Mace Windu do too. Do you know what I mean? There's an unnaturalness to the way that it looks or feels, or the lighting, or I'm not sure what it is.
Well, it's very clean. Everything's clean and not, you know, dirty and gritty, and, you know, that's what George Lucas liked so much and put so much effort to get into the first Star Wars, was for that really lived-in, realistic type of look. And you can't get that with all CGI.
Anyway, I did watch that Force for Change thing while you were talking, and I saw the thing, and it reminded me of a creature from Dark Crystal.
Yes, I was just thinking that as I was looking at it. It totally does.
Yeah.
So, Skeksis in Episode 7. I'm very happy about that.
I can't wait to get on set, man.
It's too bad Harrison Ford's not going to be there.
Oh my gosh, did you guys hear about Harrison Ford? He lost both of his legs in a threshing machine accident on the set of Witness 2.
No, and sorry, Rish. That's all wrong, man.
Okay, thank goodness.
He's not making
a Witness 2, right?
That's right. So what did you guys think of the other things that were shown in the set photos? That big, large pig creature, almost like a swine version of a bantha.
Yeah, that was interesting.
It's refreshing to see that they built the thing, that it, that people could be in it or running it or whatever it is. Not because it's going to look better or because, you know, practical is better than CG, but just because nobody does it anymore.
Yeah.
And you know what? Practical is better than CG, because if it bites somebody or if it jumps onto somebody and actually knocks them to the ground, something actually impacted this person. They don't have to pretend that they're fighting a monster. They're actually wrestling with a thing. It's not that CG is bad, but it's just a tool that gets so overused.
Yeah.
Well, I think it feels to me like it's one of the tools that you have in your toolbox, but it's not, you know, it's not the only thing that you should be using, right? I mean, you have to use all these tools to create this experience. And I think, yeah, CGI definitely gets overdone.
And, you know, if you think about those prequels, those three movies, and the character that people had the most positive things to say in all three prequels, it was Darth Maul, the guy who was just a guy with makeup on.
Mm.
Just the fact that it's a human being and you can put makeup or horns or color or contacts on him and people just go crazy about his look should have told you something, or told the filmmakers something, or continue to tell people who are making movies that you don't have to spend a ton of money on this. We responded to this badass character partly because you could tell there was a person there.
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought of it quite like that before.
There, you know, it's acting, right? It's not, I mean, we've seen good performances from like characters in a Pixar film, but it's different if they're interacting with real people. You know, it's kind of like we do podcasting, full cast audio sometimes and things like that. There's a difference between when people read their lines alone and send you their lines and you put it all together, and when it's those same people in the room. There's a different interaction between the people. We can't always do that, of course, but there is a different dynamic when we do full cast with everybody there, or at least two people together rather than everybody on their own and then bringing it all together. I feel that way about CGI too, that there's a difference there. What about, you know, if you think about the first three movies, there was a lot of stop motion as well, like the Rancor scene in Return of the Jedi. You know, that's something that could be done in CG, and it could make it better. I mean, not that I would want them to change it now, but if they were making that movie today, they wouldn't do that in stop motion. They would do that with CGI, and I think that would be a viable solution for that.
Well, see, I don't want to disagree with you, except to say I disagree with you. The Rancor was a puppet. And it was totally, totally real looking, because it was real. You know what I mean? It wasn't stop motion or you know, a giant robot or anything like that. It was a little foot tall puppet. And it's never going to look any faker than it does right now, you know, or than it did in 1983. I don't know why you would have to make that thing CG. And maybe because it actually didn't interact with Luke or the Gamorrean guard, and the moments when they do interact, that looks fake.
Wait, are you saying it's never looked any more faker?
Or... I'm saying because it was actually there and it was an actual physical thing that moved and all that, those effects never get dated.
I see.
You know what I mean? The Scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz, even though it was 1939... was just a dude. And so that particular special effect is always going to have the same impact on us as it did in 1939. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong to disagree with you, Marshall. I don't think you could do that better in CG. Because it, like when the saliva comes down from its mouth or whatever, that's real liquid on a creature as though it is alive.
Huh.
Or Jabba, cool, you know, part. He's a gigantic puppet, but he's really there, and he, you know, people are making him breathe and his eyes move and all that stuff. But how could CG make Jabba more real?
Well, we know from example on that it didn't, you know, that would be, to your point, you know, when we have seen the CG Jabba, it hasn't lived up to what it was in Return of the Jedi.
I'm sorry. There may be special effects that are bad in that movie.
I guess what I'm thinking about is the, you know, you could erase the blue lines around where they did the blue screen. You know, you can definitely, when Luke is going, you can tell there's a little blue halo around him or whatever because of the way it was back then. You could probably erase that, maybe.
Well, and I don't know, maybe I'm going to a different place here with the whole CGI versus practical effects thing, but I think that there are places when you watch those original films where, you know, the effects do look a little bit dated. And I think that they tried to clean that up a lot in the special editions, but I'm thinking of, like, I remember seeing scenes of Luke's X-Wing before the special editions flying through Bespin and in high school or college and thinking, wow, that actually does look like, you know, a dated effect. And that's something that I think you could make look a little bit better using CGI. But I think for the living, breathing creatures, it's more difficult to do. I wouldn't say it's impossible. And I kind of think that we'll see this to some degree with Andy Serkis being a character in Star Wars. I have no idea who he's playing or what he's playing. I kind of hope he's a giant galactic space monster that's floating through the planets, or floating from planet to planet and crushing them. Something just enormous or something really bizarre. But I think the way that they utilize him as an actor is going to be really, really fascinating.
We don't know what he's doing, right?
No, I have no idea what he's doing, but I mean, I think if you hire him as an actor, especially in a movie like Star Wars, there's a pretty good chance that he's going to be some kind of motion capture character, right? It's possible that he's not, but...
Well, see, that's kind of the cool thing about a movie like Star Wars is, you know, he could say, yeah, sure, I'll do your motion capture, but I also want to be a dude walking around on the planet.
Yeah.
And they totally could totally pull that off. And then he could also be some guy in a rubber mask or something.
Totally.
Too. You know, that's what I'd push for. Well, maybe I will when I show up on set in London. Hey, well, we were talking about the leaked photos there. Anything else stand out there that intrigued you guys?
Oh yeah. There was the very first picture I saw of them building a set. You could see kind of the skeleton of a very familiar ship. And I got so excited because they were building it. Again, it makes me sound like an old fart. But it's just like, why would you build the Millennium Falcon?
Yeah, and looking at the pictures on set and seeing how massive it is, right? And how, I mean, you like looking at that picture, you literally feel like Luke and Obi-Wan walking into Docking Bay 94. And staring up at this massive thing that's just taking up so much space.
And, what a piece of junk.
Yeah, that was so cool. And and I love that J.J. Abrams tweeted that, you know, the Millennium Falcon was not going to be in the movie at all. That was a ridiculous rumor. I thought that was hilarious.
Well,
that made me laugh and laugh and laugh.
Tell the listeners what the joke of that was.
Well, J.J. Abrams also directed Star Trek Into Darkness, which, you know, for a long time, he and a lot of the cast members, you know, said that Khan was not going to be in this movie. I don't know why they said that, but, you know, they stuck to it until the movie released. And then, spoiler alert, Khan was actually in the movie, played by Benedict Cumberbatch. And, you know, I think that really frustrated a lot of fans. I think that, you know, Abrams has said since then that maybe that wasn't the best idea. So I thought that was pretty funny when he tweeted that the Millennium Falcon was definitely not going to be in the movie and had a note on the playing table of the Millennium Falcon where Chewie and R2-D2 had been playing the game. I can't remember what it's called. Back in the original Star Wars.
So does that show you that he has a sense of humor? Or is that kind of him? I don't know.
You know, I mean, I guess you could look at it as when Lucas was wearing that Han shot first t-shirt a little bit back when they were making the last Indiana Jones movie, I think. And a lot of people were like, jerk. But to me, yeah, I mean, it was definitely him being like, okay, I get it. You know, that maybe was a bit ridiculous and I can laugh at myself. And, you know, it made me laugh for sure. So
I don't know. Are you guys people that feel like the Millennium Falcon is one of the characters of Star Wars?
Oh, totally.
I don't know if I'd say it's one of the characters, but it's an environment or an atmosphere like Tatooine or some of the other places that we've seen that really stick out, Dagobah or Hoth or Endor.
It's different than other ships, though. I mean, you know, there's many X-Wings out there, Y-Wings, TIE Fighters. There's all of the different Star Destroyers. And I mean, it does stand apart from those. It's not just another ship. It's definitely unique. And we have, at least I have an emotional attachment to it. I'd like to see Han piloting it, though. Lando was okay. And the little fish face guy was okay. But it needs to be Han and Chewie.
Oh, that's gotta happen, right? I mean, at least a little bit.
I don't know, you guys. Did you hear about Harrison Ford? On the set of Blade Runner 2, he was struck with a blade and run over several times by a tractor trailer. I don't know.
But Rich, that was years ago.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind. I guess he got better.
Hey, how about the two new actresses that have been announced for the film?
I'm so excited about them. I'm really, really excited that there's going to be some more actresses in Star Wars.
Instead of just one woman in the entire galaxy?
Yeah, or two, I guess, with Princess Leia. But you guys already rehashed that in a previous episode, right? About the casting and discussion. That was the one with Big, right?
Yeah, a little bit. We didn't get...
Right, but these two new names are names since that episode.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that there's going to be more women that my daughter can pretend to play, whether they're heroes or villains or side characters. I just feel like, you know, one of the bummer things about Star Wars is that it's got such a narrow gaze as far as male versus female. You have, in the movies, you have Princess Leia so far and Padme. And now you have whoever Daisy Ridley's going to play and then these other two actresses. So I'm pretty happy about that.
So I don't know anything about these actresses. Do you guys know them, have seen them in other things? I don't watch Game of Thrones, so.
Well, Marshall, you mentioned Lupita Nyong'o. How do you say her name? Anybody know?
Nyong'o, I think, is what I've heard.
You mentioned her when we recorded our last episode, and then she was later announced.
Yeah, that was a rumor at the time.
Oh, okay.
They had discussed for a long time. They put a casting call out for a character, and there was a lot of discussion that she was the one closest to getting that part. And so I think a lot of people, because of that casting call, a lot of people were expecting another woman to be announced. And so when it was just one new female character, I think that added a little bit to the backlash of all that.
Hey, since we're on that subject, I guess, have you guys heard of the Bechdel test?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, the Bechdel test.
All right. I guess for our viewers, if you don't know about it, it's basically...
Oh, I'm sorry. I haven't heard about the Bechdel test. What's that?
Basically, two women in the movie that talk to each other, and they have to talk about something other than the male lead actors in the movie.
Yeah, basically that's a joke that people started to take seriously. And now it's a law in President Hillary Clinton's America.
Was it a joke, actually?
It was. It was the punchline of a...
A comic, wasn't it?
Of a web... What? Not a web comic. It was like a 1989 underground comic about two lesbians, and one woman said, "I only go see movies when there are two women that have a conversation with each other that are not about a man. And the other woman is just like, where would you ever see a movie like that? And that's, and yeah, now people just hold it up as, you know, it's right up there with The Hero with a Thousand Faces by Joseph Campbell.
Yeah. Well, I think the Bechdel test is an interesting thing. I think it's like for a sociological standpoint, it's a really fascinating thing, and it's a good test, despite its origin, which I didn't know about until right now. But I think whether or not it makes a good movie is a different discussion that's not quite that test can't answer, right? Because you can have a good movie that fails the Bechdel test, and you can have a movie that passes the Bechdel test that totally sucks.
Well, and then where would you place a movie like Gravity, where it's essentially all about one female character? But
well, it fails.
Well, it fails the test, but does it fail as a movie? I don't think so.
No, but that's what I mean. I mean, you know, you could have a movie that fails that test that's still an excellent movie.
Right.
But I think it's not necessarily a bad thing to analyze movies in general just as a statistic almost, and see how many movies actually pass that test and what that says about our society in general.
Okay, so I was going to say something much more shallow than what you were just talking about.
Well, don't let me stop you.
Because that's why I'm here, folks. I'm the lowest common denominator. But the other woman that they announced is named Gwendolyn Christie.
Yes.
Yes. She's from Game of Thrones, right?
I also don't know her because I don't watch Game of Thrones, but I looked her up and she's 6'3".
Yeah.
Really?
And I was just like, really? There are women that are 6'3"? And suddenly I was just like, what kind of part could she play? And my friend Big said, well, obviously she's going to be a Wookiee. But
man.
6'3" is just, do you guys know any women that tall?
Yeah, actually, I have met a couple that tall, but I would have to assume she's going to be some kind of badass one way or another, whether for the dark side of the Force or for good. She'd be tough.
Well, how tall is Lucy Lawless?
I don't think she's 6'3". As far as actresses, yeah, I can't think of any right off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'll bet Gina Davis isn't even 6'3". I'm trying to think of somebody who's super tall, but a lot of the actors out there aren't super tall.
No.
And so there's going to be way fewer parts for a woman that towers over your average actor.
Yeah, it's an interesting set of casting, actually. Both of them together are really unique, I think, in film right now, or film and television or whatever. But I like that they're playing against type a little bit, and appreciate that.
So do you watch Game of Thrones, Dave?
I don't watch Game of Thrones. I've seen a little bit of it, but yeah. I don't know. I don't know if we want to get into that on this podcast.
No, I just was looking for somebody that's seen her act and if she's a good actress and if she, what kind of things.
I have seen scenes that she was in Game of Thrones on the internet or whatever. And what I've seen her do, she does very well. I saw her fighting a bear.
Nice.
You know, or trying to survive being thrown in a bear pit, which was very, very cool. It was a great scene and it was a very physical performance, and she did a great job in it. But I mean, yeah, that's my experience.
That's your experience.
Well, she speaks English with an accent, so we know she can act.
She'll be a great Imperial.
Still no Billy Dee Williams, by the way? Casting?
I haven't heard anything about him.
Well, see, now that Harrison Ford is gone, maybe they can bring Lando in. And
yeah, they'll probably have to.
Yeah, but didn't you hear Lando died on Dancing with the Stars?
Oh, no.
Yeah. What? He got squished between two women dancers. Rich, have you seen the other actress in anything before?
Yeah, there was a movie called Nonstop that came out earlier this year. I thought that movie was great. And she was in that. She played one of the flight attendants that had a Grace Jones haircut. But she got an Oscar for 12 Years a Slave. She seems really, really sweet. Every time I've seen her interviewed and all that, she's one of those really down-to-earth people that is just thrilled to be there. And she speaks with a really cool accent, too. I guess I'm just harping on the accents, but I like accents.
Accents are good. I agree. Accents are
good.
Did
you guys see Nonstop?
I haven't.
No.
I've seen Taken 2.
Well, yes, it's very similar to... I mean, but everything Liam Neeson does now, he's got a very unique set of skills. And this one, I heartily recommend it, though. Wow, that was a good movie.
There's been some other rumors out there also about, and some developments, directors announced and stuff for the other standalone Star Wars movies.
Yeah, let's talk about that, Marshall.
Yes.
Let's talk about the first one.
Okay, the first one, I believe, is the one that Gareth Edwards was announced to, that's possibly a
Boba
Fett
movie. Yeah, I don't
think
we know what the movie is yet, but we know its release date, which is December 16th, 2016, and we know who's writing it. It's the dude who wrote, it was that Denzel Washington post-apocalyptic flick.
Eli? Book of Eli.
Book of Eli. Good job. Gareth Edwards just directed the Godzilla movie, the brand new Godzilla, and before that he directed a very low budget monster movie called Monsters.
Huh.
And
did you see Monsters, Rush?
I did. Yeah.
Was it pretty cool?
Monsters wasn't my cup of tea, but basically they had no budget, and so the whole movie was, we know the monsters are there, but we haven't seen them. We haven't seen them yet. They're coming. And so his attitude was, we're not going to focus on the monsters. We're going to focus on the people and make you care about these people. And that, of course, is always good. And I don't want to spoil the movie, but you really don't see the monsters until 2 or 3 minutes before the movie is over. And I was just like, whoa, guys, really? Which makes me, you know, I have a low attention span and all that. But I just, I don't know. I didn't see the new Godzilla, but people say that it was good. I'd like to see it.
I haven't seen it either because I get to go to the movies like 3 times a year now. What I've seen of Godzilla, and at least the way they promoted it, I mean, I love how it has this very almost Jurassic Park-like feel to it, where you see Godzilla and you see glimpses of the monster, but it also focuses very much on the human characters, and the monster is just this kind of incredible, magnificent force of nature. It's funny because I haven't seen either one of his movies, but when he was announced as director, I was really pretty excited because I felt like Disney was going after somebody young and, you know, supposedly talented. He seems talented to me from what I've seen in previews and whatnot. Yeah, I just thought that was really cool. I started to get more excited about the standalone Star Wars movies than I initially was. I'm not sure like how excited I am about a standalone Boba Fett movie, to be honest, or at least I wasn't that excited about it. Whereas now I feel like if that's the way they went, I'm a little bit more curious now with that guy attached to direct it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, maybe if they follow suit with his other movies, you know, maybe this will be a Rancor movie or something like that. It'll be the monsters cool. of Star Wars.
That'd be cool.
Sarlacc, something like that.
But we don't know that it's Boba Fett, do we?
No, I think I feel like I've read somewhere that they—that's
the rumor
that they've staked out 3 standalone movies, including Boba Fett, Han Solo, and something else called Red 5. But whether or not those are actually the first 3 standalone movies they're going to make or not there's not been an official statement on that.
Well, what I heard was that Red 5 was standing by.
That's mean.
So then the other director that's been announced for a standalone film is Josh Trank, who did Chronicle. I've seen that movie. That was definitely an interesting take on the superhero.
And he's also directing the new Fantastic Four movie, right?
He is.
That's right.
But yeah, let's have a moment of silence for Harrison Ford and for this new Fantastic Four movie. But this is a really young guy. It's Josh Trank. Well, he seems really young to me. I don't know how young you are, Dave, but this guy's just turned 30.
Oh, yeah, I hate him. He's directing a Star Wars movie? Jerk.
But, you know, I've heard a theory that only really, really old people and really, really young people should make movies. Because an old person is at the end, and they're going to make every second count, and it's like, okay, this is what I've learned. And a new person, a young person is brand new, and he's got his eyes wide, and he hasn't been beaten down and forced to compromise again and again and again. Anyhow, I do like that these two guys are young and kind of I don't want to say untested, because, you know, to actually get a movie made in Hollywood and have it come out is quite an accomplishment. But still, the fact that this young guy with only one movie that's come out under his belt is doing the 2017 Star Wars. Is it the 2017?
Let's see. There's a movie coming out next Christmas, right? In 2015.
That's right.
And then there's a standalone movie after that. And then is there another, like, episode 8? Or is it another standalone at that point? It seems to me like it would be a really difficult schedule to just have a year between that storyline. But
I guess I just assumed that they would stagger them. You know, have an episode movie, then a standalone movie, then an episode movie, then a standalone. But I don't know. If they get different teams doing several things at once, I guess it could come out.
Rish, is part of your excitement for these guys that they're, like you said, they're young and they're not exactly untested, but also that they haven't compromised yet? They're, and yet they're directing Star Wars. But, you know, like there are these young guys who maybe feel like they can take on the whole empire by themselves still. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that works for me. See, J.J. Abrams is a young guy too. But he's been working long enough that I think everybody has an idea of what a J.J. Abrams movie is going to be like. Mm-hmm. And what sort of things are important to him. And, you know, how many times have you heard the lens flare joke by this point? But with Gareth Edwards and Josh Trank, what jokes are there? Oh, okay, that Boba Fett won't show up till the last 30 seconds of the movie? That's the only thing I can think of, and it's as though anything is possible with these guys.
I guess it felt like, and I'm somebody who really, really likes J.J. Abrams. I mean, you know, I don't think he's the greatest director out there or anything, but I think he's a solid director. And I'm really excited for what he'll do with the new Star Wars movie. But I feel like, you know, he was a relatively safe choice to make a Star Wars movie. He'd done a bunch of TV shows. He'd done last two Star Trek movies. You know, he'd worked with Steven Spielberg before. You know, he was not as much of a surprise as these two other guys are. And so it's an interesting feel that we have so far.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about it, you know, having these new untested guys with something to prove. You know, that's how Star Wars began, right? George Lucas was a young director. He'd had a couple movies under his belt, but he had a lot to prove. And, you know, Star Wars put him on the map. So I think that kind of stays with the spirit of how Star Wars started.
Yeah, that's true.
According to the computer, this internet thing that I've just discovered, they are supposed to be doing episode 7, and then the next year we get the first spinoff, and then episode 8, and then the next year after that we get the second spinoff. But that just seems like too short of notice.
Yeah, because we don't even know who is directing episode 8 yet, right? Or who's writing the script for that. Although maybe maybe Lawrence Kasdan is on board for that in some capacity at least, but we don't know for sure that Abrams will be back for episode 8.
Yeah, that's a good point. I had just assumed that he would come back because, you know, obviously it's his job to lose. You would think that they would offer it to him unless he turns it down. It's just a given that he'll do the next one, but I don't know.
I would hope he does. I guess unless the 7 is a total disaster, but I would hope that they have the same vision throughout the 3.
See, that's an interesting thing. I mean, I kind of agree with you guys. You know, it's nice to have that overarching vision that ties them all together. But then, you know, like the original trilogy had 3 completely different directors. And I guess we're feeling, like with the standalone movies, we are having a bunch of different directors as well. And one thing I'm really excited about the standalone movies, or that I really hope about the standalone movies, is that they make the universe of Star Wars feel bigger than just, you know, the Skywalkers and...
Exactly.
Okay, the original trilogy had George Lucas as the primary creative force on all 3 movies. Who is that creative force on these sequel films?
See, I would say that would be Abrams and or Kasdan.
Well, yeah, and I suspect that if Abrams didn't direct the second movie, Episode 8, that he would probably still be on board as like an executive producer. And Lawrence Kasdan, I'm pretty sure has been drafted into being like, you know, helping orchestrate everything. Kind of like the what's the guy's name from Marvel? Kevin
Feige?
Kevin Feige, yeah.
Well, that's a really good way to go. And I would hope that Abrams does the same with the next Star Trek movie. You know, he's not going to be able to direct it, I would assume. But I hope he still produces and he has input on the script and all that just so that it feels like the last Star Trek movie. Unless you hate the last Star Trek movie and then, you know.
I think I did read somewhere that he is going to be producing that one.
Well, I guess, how do you guys feel about the Harry Potter movies? You know, those definitely had different directors as they went through. Did you feel it suffered from different divisions, different
I focus? Did, you know, I did feel like it became really, really, you know, I really liked Prisoner of Azkaban a lot, but I did feel like the movies became really more grand and focused with David Yates directing. And I think he started with Order of the Phoenix and then carried on through the rest of the movies. But yeah, before that, when you had like Chris Columbus directing the first 2 and then Alfonso Cuarón directing the 3rd one, a little bit like they didn't quite connect as well as you would have liked, maybe. And then I think it was Mike Newell who directed the 4th one, Goblet of Fire. And that one, you know, definitely seemed different from Prisoner of Azkaban. So yeah, I mean, for a while they did all feel unique. And that wasn't always, I mean, that was interesting, but it wasn't always a good thing.
The guiding force in those was probably J.K. Rowling with her books. But there were producers that were consistent on all the movies. But yeah, if you just take like the score of one Harry Potter and compare it to the score of others, except for the 3 that Williams did, they do feel really different.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, do you get Williams to score the spinoff movies as well? Or do you just give it to a new person and say, here you go, man?
You know, I think getting somebody else to score the new ones, the spinoff movies, is probably a really good idea, especially if you're wanting to make them separate from the main storyline. Having somebody just use maybe the main Star Wars theme and then creating their own music for the rest of it would be pretty sweet.
Well, and I think having Williams do them all would put a lot of pressure on him. And man, I'm just hoping he lives forever so that we can always have John Williams music.
Yeah.
The Marvel movies, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is probably a really good comparison because they do have different feels. Like Thor compared to Captain America, compared to Guardians of the Galaxy, compared to Avengers. I mean, even the two Captain America movies feel so totally different from
one another. Yeah, they do.
But yet they are all in the same universe. And it just, it surprises me that that works, that people are okay with that. And I mean, I'm glad, but there are people that just said, you know, superhero movies are all the same. And these movies feel totally different, look totally different. And if they can do that with the Star Wars spinoffs and say, yeah, the Boba Fett movie is kind of a film noir set in space. And the Han Solo movie is kind of a coming of age drama, if anything, set in space. And the Yoda movie is... a blaxploitation flick set in... No, I don't know what the Yoda movie would be, but...
A stoner comedy, clearly.
There you go.
Yoda with a hookah.
That needs to happen now.
And what's his name?
Seth Rogen, maybe, playing the part of Yoda.
Yeah, Seth Rogen could be his Padawan.
Yeah, or his supplier.
There you go.
What will the reaction be if these spin-off movies feel totally different than the mainstream Star Wars movies?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think they have to feel a little bit different. But, you know, like you brought up the Marvel comparison, and I think that's a really apt one. They have to feel like their own unique thing. But at the same time, they have to feel like they could take place in you know, this larger universe that makes sense and that is shared between other characters to some degree. And, you know, so far Marvel has been super successful with that. Even with something as awesomely bizarre and weird-looking as Guardians of the Galaxy, it, you know, that looks like to be... an extremely big amount of fun. And I haven't really heard anybody complaining about the way that movie looks. But at some point, I guess you have to, will it be so different that people don't like it? How far are you willing to push yourself? And I think to me, the thing that's more scary is that Star Wars would become what it was with the prequels, a very kind of mundane experience. And I think that's the bigger fear for me, is that if it's all what you expect, then it's not as much fun as it could be. So I hope that they really go the opposite way and try to do things as differently as possible.
Yeah, I think they really do need to stand alone. I mean, of course, they'll have the same, you know, types of things in them. But, you know, I think they would hurt themselves by trying to send too many nods to the original films or to any of the main films. You know, of course, there'll be some things that where they'll talk about it. But they just need to be their own thing and not just rely on the core Star Wars films to make them go. You know, I think a lot of the groans, some of the groans that came from the prequels is being too self-referential to the original and trying to cram too much in from that. I mean, it was supposed to link that in, especially the last one, but, and I think they did a good job on Revenge of the Sith, you know, at the end with the Antilles ship and everything.
Yeah, you think so? I mean, I shouldn't interrupt. But I tried watching the first Star Wars movie again not very long ago, and looking at that ship in A New Hope and remembering it from Revenge of the Sith, I was like, man, I almost wish it had been a different ship.
Yeah, I mean, I liked seeing C-3PO and R2-D2 walking through the halls of there. Kind of as that reference. But I think these new standalone films should do what they can to stay away from that rather than cling to the source material. Just my thought.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think I'm with you. You know, I think that when I first heard about the three episodes that they were going to make that focused on the Skywalker, I don't know, clan or whatever, and then that they were going to do standalone movies, I was really kind of sketchy about the standalone movies, but I just find myself feeling like that could very well be where some of the more exciting things happen. I'm sure that episode 7, you know, especially with Abrams directing it, he'll try to make it as exciting and emotional and cinematic and whatever as possible. But I feel like the other movies are going to have the ability to take more chances than those other three Star Wars movies.
That makes sense to me, too. There's a lot less writing on a, say, Han Solo adventure than there is on the next chapter in the Star Wars saga. I think if the Han Solo movie is successful or if it really works, that people will want more Han Solo movies. And I can get more excited about seeing like the adventures of youthful Han Solo and Chewbacca than I can to see the elderly adventures of Luke, Han, and Leia. I don't know why, because it flies in the face of everything I believe in. I hate reboots. I hate it when they start over with, like, you know, a younger cast and say, everything that you believed is over. This is not your father's Star Trek. But yet I think that the sky is the limit in finding out how Chewie and Han met, or how Han won the Millennium Falcon from Lando, or, you know, how he became embittered and, you know, decided that he didn't believe in anything and he only cared about one person.
You know, I'm also a little bit apprehensive about, like, a young Han Solo movie. Do you feel that way at all? Maybe it's, like, the prequels kind of, my experience with them, like, getting so hyped to see, you know, Anakin Skywalker and young Obi-Wan Kenobi and that story being not at all what I expected. I'm anxious about, like, I almost wish the standalone movies were something that we didn't have any idea, like, that were completely brand new, you know? I know that at some point there's going to be a Boba Fett movie and there's going to be a Han Solo movie, and there probably will be, like, you know, a Yoda movie or something like that. And that's cool. But I'm really excited to start seeing the boundaries of Star Wars pushed a little bit.
So you would like a standalone movie to be truly standalone, and everybody is new, and all the places they go are new, maybe, you know, taking place 1,000 years in the past or so far away that they haven't even heard of the Empire, that kind of stuff?
Maybe not quite that far away, but, like, you know, don't get me wrong, like, the story of Han Solo and Chewie first connecting and, you know, Han Solo freeing Chewie, all that finally coming to the big screen, I do want to see that. But I also want to see stuff about characters that I'm not familiar with, you know, that win me over or that surprise me in new and different ways.
Yeah, see, I'd love to see, like a Star Wars spy movie, you know, where they're sneaking behind enemy lines or, you know, getting the stolen plans for the Death Star or whatever. You know, I think that would just be totally cool to see a team of spies or something like that, and how that would work in the galaxy or in the Star Wars universe kind of thing.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
I'd really be down with that. Or, you know, and I wouldn't want it so far removed, Rish, that, you know, like, they didn't know who the Empire was, sometimes, like, you know, 100 years before the prequels or 100 years after the movies that we're familiar with, that could be pretty cool. That could be pretty cool.
But, see, that's going to be the real risk.
Yes, you're right.
That they're going to have to take a deep breath and say, okay, guys, for the episode between this one and this one, it's going to be about characters you never heard of. Or it's going to be, you know, we're going to do a heist movie set in space, and we just want you to trust us. And that's what I feel like Marvel Studios did or is doing with Guardians of the Galaxy. So few people even know who these guys are, these characters. And yet they've got me super excited because it just looks like a blast.
Right.
And I have no preconceived notions of who Star-Lord is supposed to be or whether they got Gamora's costume right or any of that stuff. I'm just going to be able to lean back and go, oh, wow, that's cool. Oh, he can do that?
Well, I think we're probably at a good stopping point. I think we've covered most of what we wanted to talk about. But as always, last words, we can go around. Any last words before we call it a night?
May force be with us all.
Ooh, that's good. See, I was going to dedicate this episode to Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
Who tragically couldn't be with us today.
You know, Rish, I'm beginning to think you're right. I'm kind of worried now.
I'm sure by the time this episode airs, everyone will know that it was no big deal. But
I don't know. By the time the episode airs, we're going to find out that like he had to have his foot amputated or something. It's going to be awful.
Well, then they could just work in a lightsaber scene somehow, you know?
They'll bring Andy Serkis in to motion capture the character of Han Solo.
Or at least his foot.
There you go.
Hey, Dave, thanks for being with us. Is there anything you want to plug, man?
It was a blast. I love talking to you guys about Star Wars. Thanks for having me. You know, check out Podcastle, which is the fantasy fiction audio podcast that I host. We have all kinds of fantasy fiction there, whether it be superhero stories, epic fantasy, very weird stuff. Come by, listen to a story, and thank you again so much for having me. It was a blast.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We look forward to the continuation of Star Wars and still having more delusions. We will see you next month.
All right, good night, everybody. Yub nub, nubby chub.
The Delusions of Grandeur podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. This means you can share it with anyone, but do not change it or sell it. Many Bothans died to bring us this information.